we were able to capture some fingerprints. But again, same as the DNA, we haven't been able to match that to anybody.
He's probably one of the biggest considerate, open-hearted people that I knew. But, you know, honestly, he had an addiction too, right?
Just the writing, we can talk. There's a possibility here that there were childhood traumas.
We're trying to turn every stone to find evidence.
This is Genevieve Germain, host of True Crime Real Time. Join me on a bi-weekly dive into the lives of the missing and murdered, available wherever you listen to your podcasts. You'll never know who else you'll meet along the way.
Targeted. True crime, domestic violence. We tell stories of those who were targeted by domestic abuse and investigate cases of family violence, using academic research to interpret the events. As a college professor, I think we need to stop making family violence a secret. Let's use our stories to help, heal, and provoke change. Season 3 features the case of Josh Osborne, which is a story of abuse.
When he woke up, she was abusing him. When he went to sleep, she was abusing him. So his abuse was nonstop. It didn't matter what he did, It was nonstop.
But it is also a story of hope. Targeted. True crime, domestic violence. Listen to us for free on all of your favorite podcatchers. Peace, my friends. Peace.
Ladies and gentlemen, this podcast, truly one of the most unusual ever recorded, contains dribble, slang, and frank discussion of subject matter which under no circumstances should be heard by small children, persons with a heart condition, or anyone who is upset easily. If you are such a person, or if you're the parent of a very small child in the room, we urge you to switch off your streaming device now.
Hey, Cam, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm doing great. It's getting close to Halloween.
I'm good. Wearing a hoodie, and it's delicious outside because it's cloudy and all the trees are brown and orange. And
all the trees are brown.
Sky is gray, and the sky is gray.
It's true. It's coming. Halloween's coming. I love it. It's my favorite time of year.
This is Halloween.
I was trying to think what's really, really scary to me, and this is true to life scary. And this thing that I'm about to do. The case that I am going to tell you today is a big fear of mine. So I'll let you know. Okay. But before we get into
dirty
this,
toes.
No, then I would never hang out with you if it was dirty toes. Yeah. But before we go into the story today, I'd like to give some shout outs to some reviewers.
Woo-hoo!
Now, I want to apologize because I saw that Nick Calavera and Corey Fouch. Now, and I'm sure, Corey, I know we've discussed how you pronounced your name, but
it's
I forgot.
Jennifer.
Yeah. Anyway, they left some reviews a while back.
Aw,
so
thanks, Nick.
We
thanks,
totally
Corey.
Forgot them. So I want to say a big shout out.
I didn't forget them.
You never looked up to
I
see
know.
If they left anything.
That's why I never forgot them.
But a big shout out to them for leaving us
or
great.
Or for them. Either or.
It all works.
It works.
Also, we'd like to give a big shout out to Death by Champagne. Mac and Liv, they left us a great review. They're awesome. You should give them a big,
listen.
You should actually go listen to them. They're awesome.
Death
we love them.
Podcast.
Actually, Mac
Check
is
out.
My daughter's aerial coach, and you should see her on the silks, man. Mac is awesome. So is Liv, but.
I'm sure Liv could do the silks too if she was trained.
I'm sure she could too.
Yeah.
They're both so damn cute. Also, big thanks to Cowan_2017.
Yay, Cowan.
Also, Mom5132, or otherwise known as Michelle.
Thanks, Michelle.
Thanks for the shout out, or thanks for the
it's
great review.
Dispatch, by the way. The dispatch of the police. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Sure. And then.
You say it.
Hmm?
You say that word.
Had to call dispatch.
Mm-hmm, that's what I said. Okay, keep going.
Okay. And then also, big thank you to YLacy-D. YLaciD. Thank
no
you so
dash.
Much.
There's a space. But
oh, a space. Space dash. It's all the same. Thank you for your nice
Thank
review.
You.
And also Java Jack Green.
I like that name. Java Jack.
Java Jack. Thank you so much for your 5-star reviews. We appreciate you guys. We love you. Thank you ever so much.
Makes us happy.
Totally makes our day. Camille stalks the reviews.
That's the one thing. See, that's that. I just do.
She does. And every time I'll get like a text in the middle of the day and she'll have a great big, it'll be a snapshot of the review with a great big red heart on it. So if you don't think it makes a difference, it really does.
Huge difference.
So anyway, we're done with all that.
I can't wait to hear this. I hear it is a doozy.
This one was new to me and I was enthralled.
Hit me.
All right. In 1904,
an old one.
17-year-old Benjamin, well, I've heard it as Benedito or Benjamino Evangelista, came to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Quickly changed his name to Benny Evangelist.
Benny the Bull.
He came here with his older brother, or actually, I believe his brother was here before them. And they came here from Naples, Italy, and they settled down in Philadelphia. Pennsylvania. You know that city, right?
I do.
Brotherly love and
mm-hmm.
all that.
Mm-hmm.
Both brothers did very well in the new country. They both very prosperous. They've got jobs. They had houses, places to live. But around 1906, Benny, the devout Catholic, began showing an interest into the occult.
Oh, Ben. Nope.
Now, you have to remember, that's the time about late 1800s, the spirituality movement came. You know, even one of the presidents had a seance in the White House. Mm. It was big.
Mm-hmm.
Benny started to get interested in the occult. And actually, he started to go into these trances where he would claim to have visions from God. Now, some of these visions were extremely dark. They really didn't align with the Catholic faith mm-hmm. that both he and his brothers had grew up practicing, correct? So Antonio, Benny's brother, wasn't a fan of this new Benny. Didn't like his claims, and they fought a lot. And actually, by 1908, the rift was so big between the two that Antonio disowned Benny. So Benny picked up and moved to York, Pennsylvania, and then started working for the railroad. Let me tell you a little bit about Pennsylvania if you don't know.
Okay.
In the late 17th century, many Germans settled in Pennsylvania. We now call them the Pennsylvania Dutch. Now,
if they were from Germany, why are they called the Pennsylvania Dutch?
Because the Dutch is right around German. I don't know. It's got something to do with.
It's. We'll just go with that.
I'm just telling you what I read. It, don't throw any geography in me.
I
can't. I can't do it.
Okay,
I can't do geography because I'm sure there's going to be math somewhere and I'm saving that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saving up for math. So all these immigrants settled around the same area. To be close to one another. Now, they all preferred the country, and they didn't like highly populated areas.
Mm-hmm.
So they far away from the rest of the world, right? And since they were semi-shut off from everyone, they started to develop their own culture, their own way of living. Now, they all came from different religious backgrounds, mostly Christianity,
mm-hmm.
but they started to develop their own system of belief. Or maybe their own kind of sub-religion. While they still practice Christianity, they kind of had like a darker side. They used folk magic, okay? And it's called powwow. Now, it has nothing to do with the Indians, but they developed these powwows were like spells or potions, things that could cure illnesses or keep witches away. Like one of the things you'll find, sometimes people will be restoring houses up in Pennsylvania. And they'll knock down a wall and they'll find like a shoe or they'll find a bottle of old urine. Well, the shoe would signify, which is a powwow, it would signify to keep the evil spirits away. Bottle of urine would be to keep witches away.
Mm.
So that's just kind of little, it wasn't black magic, but it was kind of folk things.
You
know how my grandma would say that she could take warts away?
Mm-hmm.
That was that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, harmless things, but still spells and kind of witchy. Like mm-hmm. after they would do the spells, they would cross themselves like mm-hmm. Catholics do mm-hmm. after prayer. And depending on the spell book, depending on how many crosses after the spell, that's how many times you would cross yourself.
Oh, okay.
So just interesting, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's believed that this is where Benny kind of got his big taste into the occult. And he started to sell potions.
Mm-hmm.
He learned this. He took all this in. So he started to make his own potions. and amulets and spells, and he started to sell them to people who needed help with whatever ailed them, whether it's a hangnail or they needed love. He was selling love potions. He was calling himself a healer, all sorts of stuff.
Snake oil salesman kind of the day, right?
Pretty much.
Okay.
But he was throwing in religion to the mix. In need of a confidant, I guess, Benny became fast friends with another immigrant that was from Naples, and his name was, you're going to love this because I can't pronounce it, Arlis Angelino.
Mm-hmm. Arlis, luckily, A-R, like Arlis.
A-U-R-E-L-I-U-S. Arlis. Well, lucky for us, they called him Leon.
Thank goodness.
Yes. Woo! Woo! Leon was about 20 years older than Benny, and they shared the same interest in occult philosophies, mainly theosophy. I believe that's how you pronounce it. T-H-E-O-S-O-P-H-Y. Now, theosophy was established in 1875 in New York City. New York City!
I'm just thinking I'm going to establish something.
I know.
I am. I'm going to think about it.
And their belief was that there were masters located all over the earth, and they were all going to come together, and their religion was going to take over all the other world's religion. And it was based on, it was so confusing because it's much smarter than I am, or dumber than I am. I can't imagine. They were trying to revive knowledge of an ancient religion. And well, let me just read this.
Okay.
This is what I got from good old Wiki. Theosophy teaches that there is an ancient and secretive brotherhood of spiritual folk known as the Masters. The Masters are located all over the world, and these Masters are attempting to revive knowledge of an ancient religion that will one day replace all the other world religions. It preaches the existence of a single and divine absolute, like one God. Mm-hmm. It promotes the belief that the cosmos, in which the universe is perceived, as outward reflections from this absolute. Theosophy teaches that the purpose of human life is spiritual emancipation and claims that the human soul undergoes reincarnation upon bodily death, according to a process called karma. It promotes value and universal brotherhood and social improvement, although it does not stipulate particular ethical codes.
Okay.
Got it?
Mm-hmm. I was just thinking that they created all of that to benefit them in the ways that they needed. Okay, go ahead.
Correct. That, as with most of these made-up religions are. While he's studying this, Benny decides, he begins to develop his own philosophies of life and the Bible.
Now, did Benny or Leon think that they were a master, or were they out searching?
And never said. They were just studying. That was their main source. They were very interested in theosophy.
So they never claimed to be a master?
No, they never claimed. They just were, that was their main interest. They liked all, they studied everything, but theosophy, however you pronounce that, was their main interest.
I gotcha.
So during this time, Benny began to develop his own philosophies of life, and started to write his own Bible, which he entitled...
Dianetics?
Close. The Oldest History of the World Discovered by Occult Sciences. I mean, it just rolls off the tongue.
Wait, say it again?
The Oldest History in the World Discovered by Occult Science.
That seems like this is the best darn book in the whole wide world.
And
ever,
then later, ever. And then later, when he actually publishes it, he adds, in Detroit, Michigan.
Oh, yeah.
So not only did he start writing this Bible... Mm-hmm. He started his own religion. He started to teach his philosophy. So, but a funny thing happened on the way to his religion.
Epiphany.
Yeah. In May 1919, Benny's best friend and buddy, Leon, had some sort of mental break.
Oh.
And he was put into an asylum. Unfortunately, Leon's wife decided that she didn't want him in an asylum and he would be better off at home. It didn't work very well. Right. So she fought, and she got him released.
Mm-hmm.
The next day, Leon took a club and tried to kill his wife while she was making dinner.
One day later.
One day. The next day. The next day. She was able.
Thank you for getting me out of the loony bin.
Exactly. She was able to grab two of their four children and escape the house.
Two of the four.
Well, they unfortunately were twins and they were sleeping in their bedroom.
Oh, didn't make it.
They were 4 years old. No, he took the clubs and he crushed their skulls.
Oh my God.
So then Leon stripped down naked, totally in all his birthday glory, and picked up his dead sons, took them out in the front yard, took an axe, and start chopping up one of the twins.
Oh my God.
Now, one of the articles I read said he chopped the one up and stuffed him into cans, which I don't.
Cans are like barrels.
It just said parts in a can, so maybe it was a barrel. But before he could dismember and chop up the second twin, the police were able to come and stop him. Believe it or not, he then ended up in the Pennsylvania Asylum, home for the criminally insane.
Which is where he belonged before his wife got him out.
Exactly. So
he should have got Lenny out and left Leon in there.
People are speculating, you know, could it have been the occult? Could it have been a demon entered his body? You know, God only knows what they were doing, Ouija boards. Or did he just have a mental breakdown and just go crazy? But now I only found this in one article, so I'm not can't really say that it's for real. It wasn't in a newspaper. It was not in a newspaper article, so I'm not for sure. But it was said in the article that police, when they looked at the crime scene, they did find Benny Evangeliste's bloody fingerprints.
So they thought
the house.
Benny was in on it too?
That's what it says. But I only found it in one spot.
Okay.
It could be to add to like the scary story.
I would think that, yeah.
Benny, I guess he just needed to get out of Dodge. So he decided shortly after he didn't want to be associated to anything Leon, or maybe he was really in the house and he needed to get out of the city. He didn't want anything to hurt his new religion, as I'm assuming. So he decided to move to Detroit sometime in 1921. Now his brother had moved to Detroit sometime earlier.
And they're still not speaking?
Well, Benny did move in with him and his wife and kids for a while. So I guess they mended their feud. But while he was living with them, he did get a job as a carpenter. Things go well. He does very well in his carpenter business. And he's still selling his potions and amulets and all sorts of black magic voodoo type things.
Yes.
So he's making really nice money. Benny finds a wife, supposedly by the use of his own love potion, and he starts a family. He and his wife start a family. Now, one of the articles said that he had four children, and not all of them were his children, that his wife had had some children prior.
Okay.
But at least I believe one was their child. But that can't be confirmed either. Things are going well. Benny graduates from a carpenter and becomes a contractor, and then starts dabbling into real estate development. And now he's doing really well. So he really starts up his cult, which he calls the Union Federation of America. He calls himself a prophet, a mystic, and a faith healer. And he started this knowledge of the occult with a mixture of black magic, voodoo-type religions. While he's still a practicing Catholic, he's doing this. And a lot of the Catholicism that he knows is being written down in his Bible.
Portions of it to...
Portions in his own way.
To twist it to how it works for him.
Okay. We'll go get into that a little bit later. So he's using whatever he can, his potions, his herbal remedies, his faith healing, amulets. He's selling these to cure whatever ails you, basically, like I said earlier. And funny, this is funny. I find it's funny, kind of. He even got his medical license so he could be called a doctor.
He went to medical school?
No, the state of Michigan granted him a medical license, but the stipulation was he could not administer drugs or prescribe medicine. But he could still, like, the herbal remedies and the potions were not actually what the state considers drugs. So, yes, he was now Dr. Benny Evangeliste, or Evangeliste.
Hello, Evangelist? Is his last name Evangelist?
When you look up, when you look up Benny Evangeliste, you'll get up Benny Hinn Evangeliste, like all sorts of...
But his last name really is, like,
Evangeliste. Evangeliste. It was Evangelista, or Evangelista.
Oh.
but he changed it to evangelist or evangelist.
I didn't catch that the first time.
So, but that didn't stop him from selling, even though he couldn't prescribe medicines, it didn't stop him from selling his herbal remedies or potions. People from all over the neighborhood where he lived, which was highly populated Italian immigrant neighborhood, they would come to him to get their astrological cards written out. Mm-hmm. They'd come for love potions, hexes, amulets, and they would come to hear him prophetizing and for his sermons. And sometimes for any of his services, he would charge upwards of $10 per service, which today's money, it's about $150.
Okay.
That's like a lot of money back then.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So in 1926, Benny finally self-publishes the first book of his Bible. He had plans to do four volumes.
Can you give me the name of this one again?
The Oldest History in the World Discovered by Occult Sciences in Detroit, Michigan.
I love it.
I know. It just rolls off the tongue.
Check it out at all your favorite bookstores.
Excuse me, do you have the book? I wanted to look up the book to see what it is. There was one for sale for like $2,000.
Really?
Mm-hmm. But I did find a free PDF version of the book by Jarrett Kobeck.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually writes a foreword to this.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to read you this because it makes me laugh. Yeah.
I was hoping.
The Oldest History of the World is a work so obscure that to call it forgotten would be an abuse of terms. Forgotten things first must be known, remembered. The work at hand had no such luck. Self-published in 1926 by its author, Benny Evangelist, Evangelist or Evangelist, however you want to pronounce it, it has remained nearly unread for the past 75 years.
Do you wonder why?
So basically, Benny's Bible was a rewritten version of Genesis. It goes to right before the world was created, up until a few thousand years before Noah and the Great Flood. And the only characters that are in this from the original Bible are God,
mm-hmm.
Adam, Eve, and their sons, Cain and Abel.
And Benny.
Well, Benny, the rest is just,
Benny would be like number five.
The rest is purely Benny's imagination or his vision.
Okay, yes.
And from the foreword again, the author states, most people who attempt to read this book will fail. This reflects nothing on them. The text is difficult, confusing, and sometimes illiterate. For all the bad, there is enormous amount of good. There are moments of shocking clarity and outrageous beauty. Word juxtapositions that would never occur in the writing of a person even minimally trained in the language appear in nearly every sentence, and they're strong. They point to a direction English never took and never should.
And there was a reason.
Yeah. So he goes on to state that there, as far as he knows, the author, Jarrett Kobeck, as far as he knows, there's only three copies of the original Oldest History of the World. And the edition that he had put out in the PDF form, he actually found in the research collection of the New York Public Library. He went for 2 weeks. He went to the New York Public Library, took the Bible, and he retyped it word for word as much as he could.
Wow.
And he said the copy was entered into the collection at the New York Public Library in March of 2007. So he's assuming that Benny sent it to him himself.
Oh, really?
Benny sent them the book himself. Oh. Yeah, because they weren't going to buy it.
Right.
Or whatever. So
Benny's still alive in 2007?
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Is he dead yet?
Well, now he is.
Okay. I don't know. Okay.
Well, it's 2000. He's dead. He was born in 1885. What do you think?
He's a prophet. He could live forever.
That's
I don't
true.
Know. Duh.
So Benny was making so much money doing his real estate, doing his
Doctorial,
contractor movie. He was doing
Beverly.
So well.
And he moved to Beverly.
He was able to move his family into a green, two-story, nine-room home. Huge porch, basement, attic. You got it. The works, right?
Was it green?
It was green.
Was it green, like recyclable green that we know today, or was it the color green?
It was the color green.
Okay, I was just checking.
Yeah.
Because he's so far
ahead. He liked green.
This profiting.
Well, he liked green. Green was a big color for him.
Mm-hmm.
Benny took over the basement.
Oh, of the house?
Mm-hmm. And he turned it into his
lair,
sanctuary church, his church, his shrine.
Yes.
And that's where he would preach his sermons.
Amen.
Also, he would preach in a fake wig and beard, by the way.
Oh.
Yeah.
Like Noah or Moses?
I have no idea. Just decided to wear a beard.
He had to take on that persona.
Yeah.
I guess.
When he
brought, spirit came through him. Yep. I got you.
He had to wear a wig
judging.
And
not
a beard.
Judging. No judgy.
Maybe he had anxiety and that was a way to cover up his anxiety. He also wore that when he was doling out the poor. Whenever he became the prophet, he wore the wig and the beard, basically.
Same one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
He didn't change it like Dolly Parton, according to what's going on.
Yeah, he's a simple man.
Okay. He's a simple man
of the church.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Also, the walls were covered in a light green fabric, the walls and the ceilings.
Oh, he really did.
He really did like green. And in some parts, it was kind of puffed out, like a padded cell wall, maybe. Oh. Yeah.
Oh. Well, that used to be the style where they would take the drapery and hang it. So it was it almost looked like a giant pin cushion
like
in the room.
Circus.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like a circus tent. There was also an altar, /desk. But over the altar was a.
Yes.
The prophet Benny made 10 wax figures.
Oh, this is very Jeffrey Dahmer-esque.
Yeah.
Okay.
And supposedly they were made in the image of the people in his Bible.
Oh.
Right? Bible. And he hung them on the ceiling, in the solar system form.
Oh.
Because remember the Thea, yeah. That one religion that they like, the mm-hmm. Theosophy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It had the cosmos meaning things. Okay. And in the center of this wax figure solar system thing was was this eye that he had made.
The third eye?
Kind of. But it was lighted from the inside, so it shined on...
The altar desk?
The altar desk and all the wax papier-mâché type figures. And that eye represented Benny's Bible, which he called the sun, S-U-N, sun. So the eye was a Bible... That looked like a sun.
The world's longest book title. That would be better.
That would be in Detroit, Michigan. Yeah. So
I interrupted you. I'm sorry. This is a doozy.
It's.
But please tell me you have a picture of those.
Yeah, I do.
You do?
I do. It'll be on the.
Yes.
I mean.
Okay.
So in the window of the basement, there was this, which you could see, the basement was even street level. He had put a sign that said Great Celestial Planet Exhibition. And
Mobile?
It seemed.
That's just above the...
Yeah, he wanted people... He had asked the police if he could have people come in to look at his exhibit, kind of like a museum and such like that, but the police said no.
You know what I was just thinking? My dog is shedding and has dog hair all over, and it makes balls around the floor. Maybe I'll see if I can have that on display and have people...
Just pour some wax on those babies and fashion it to look like a...
Flashlight on and off.
Make your own religion. Right. I heard it's very profitable.
I'm going to.
I heard it's much more profitable than podcasting.
Yeah, well...
It's got to be. All right. Now we've got the backstory. We're heading on in.
I can't wait.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Utterly insane.
Mm-hmm.
So around 10:30 a.m. on July 3rd, 1929, Benny's real estate agent, Vincent Elias, Elias, yeah, Vincent Elias, knocked on the door of the evangelist's home to finish up some paperwork that Benny was going to buy a farm.
Mm.
And they had some paperwork to do, and Benny needed to sign some things. Maybe some cash was going to be exchanged. Don't know. But that was his purpose, something about the farm. Kept knocking, no answer. Finally, he checks the doors. Unlocked, he walks in, he calls out, hey, I'm here. No answer. It's very quiet. He gets concerned. I'll go down to the altar room. I'll see Benny's down there.
Desk, altar.
Right. And there he finds, sitting upright in the chair by his desk or altar, fully dressed and his clothing had been neatly straightened, sat Benny. His arms had been crossed on his chest and his head was at his feet.
Wait, what? His head was chopped off?
Chopped off his head and put it by his feet.
He did that?
He was decapitated.
Who did it?
That's why I'm here. He's in a mental institution. And some accounts say that instead of his hands being crossed around his chest, it was actually in prayer, he had been, but his head was definitely off his body. Didn't go to see if it was just chopping the head off's not that easy.
No.
So I'm certain that it was a lot gorier than just a headless man.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, of course, this freaked Vincent out because he's no dummy. It'd be horrifying. He runs out of the house. He gets neighbors. He calls police. And when the police arrive, of course, they go down to Benny first, right? And they look around at the body. They see him sitting there. And then they see footprints, bloody footprints. So they follow them. Just wanted to let you know that the newspaper called them dainty footprints.
Does that mean they're female?
They were male, but they were dainty. They were small.
Oh.
And the footprints went upstairs. Went upstairs, and in the master bedroom, they found Benny's wife, Satina, was 38, laying half off the bed.
Oh, she's dead too?
Her head was smashed in and nearly severed from her body. One of her arms was almost cut off at the shoulder. And her other arm was the body of 18-month-old Mario.
No.
His head was also crushed in. He was basically mutilated. His entire body was mutilated. 18-month-old man.
Who has the thing with the head?
Mm-hmm. In another room, it was a room that was attached by a door for the parents' room. The bodies of Margaret, who was 5, Jean, or Eugenia, who was 4, both laid in their twin beds. Both had their heads bashed in, mutilated. And then 7-year-old Evangeline was found laying on the floor near a door, also mutilated, head bashed in. The murder scene was like so bloody and so gross. The bodies were so mutilated that actually it wasn't until a few days later that they found out that it was actually reported, you know, the 5-year-old Margaret, they reported as 5-year-old Margaret. It was actually 5-year-old Matthew. So it was a son that was.
That's how badly they were.
Right. So yeah. I'm not for sure if that was a mistake on the newspaper's part or the police officer's part, or I don't know how they would get.
Yeah.
Somebody had to have known that he didn't have a girl named Margaret. But anyway, one of the girls, and it never said which one, also had one of her arms severed or nearly severed. And what's really sad is police believe that Evangeline heard something going on because she was up out of her bed and she had her robe on. And they think that as she was leaving, she opened up the door and came face to face with the axe murderer. And then the axe was put into her head.
Oh, wow.
How awful is that? That's 7. They think they heard, since their room is attached, since their rooms were attached to their mother, they think she heard it. And
do you think the mom would?
They think that Benny went first because he liked to go into his trances between 12 a.m. to 3 a.m. That's when he could talk to his spirits. So they think that he was probably in a trance or whatever at the time. And then they went up and the mother was next. So you can't, and I'm sure, I couldn't imagine. The police started to search the Divine Prophet's office / altar. And found that the Bible, of Benny's Bible, was just scattered. Just pages of the Bible were scattered all across the room. And lying on Benny's desk were 3 photographs of a small child, boy, in a casket. They had no idea what that meant. They later discovered that the boy was actually a son of Benny's that had died years before.
From the wife or from somebody else?
Just,
somebody else.
It just said, I'm assuming that it was Satina's. But he had passed before his first birthday. But why, nobody knows to this day why those pictures were there on his desk.
Did he get those out and was like?
Nobody knows. They were just, they don't know if it means something, if it's a certain meaning. Nothing. There were also a lot of women's underwear around the room. Well, no, they had names on them. And it seems that anybody that practices voodoo, the voodooism is what, or black magic is what the newspaper had called it. It said that if you bring a high priestess or a prophet or somebody, a person's underwear with their name on it, they will be able to find the missing person or something missing.
Yeah, their underwear, because you have
You have their underwear. I don't know. I'd be kind of creeped out if my husband was collecting underwear downstairs. So. Police also found hundreds of cards of all of Benny's clients.
People that business cards or
just
like greeting cards?
Well, he kept files of everybody, correct? Probably to find out information on them. The people that used his clients, most of them were from the neighborhoods or they were other Italian immigrants. Well, it seemed that Benny was taking, helping upwards of 75 people a day.
Really? So getting $10 a pop?
Yep. Amazing, right?
Yeah.
The police interviewed all these names that they found in the records, and most of them just denied saying, oh, no, I don't know why my name was there. I don't, nobody ever spoke about
nobody
it.
Nobody wants to admit that they go to a psychic on the daily.
They also discovered 3 letters of extortion from an organization known as the Black Hand. Now, the Black Hand was established by Italian immigrants in the United States during the 1880s. It's basically an extortion group, and they would target Italian immigrants. They would target their own, and they would extort them, and they would usually extort the Italian immigrants with the most money. The Black Hand would send their mark a letter, threaten bodily harm, kidnapping, you know, the normal extortion stuff, and then sign it with a hangman's noose, a skull, a knife with blood, and Black Hand. Okay. Yeah. But during 1929, the Black Hand organization was kind of
falling apart.
Not really.
Stock market suffering.
Yeah. It was kind of losing its way, although the mafia was picking up its,
more
you know.
It's not a black hand anymore. It's more like a light brown hand or maybe like even a mitten.
It's just kind of like a thumb.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they pretty much believe the guy who did it was an amateur and that Benny kind of like laughed it off. They didn't think it was. They just was some guy that wanted to hit an easy mark and get some money from Benny. But before, the Black Hand was pretty serious. Now, mafia still uses their techniques, but, you know, whatever. It's all what goes around comes around, right?
Goes around, comes around.
So the biggest piece of evidence that they found were two bloody fingerprints on a doorknob. Now, looking back on the crime scene, it might not be what we think it is. It might not be a big deal. It seems that the police did not really keep the crime scene secure. They had looky-loos coming in, looking around. They had newspaper reporters coming in, taking photographs.
That had to be quite the salacious crime back then. Because
Him
being in the neighborhood, and I'm sure everybody knew of him, at least.
Well,
not knew him, right?
They knew he was a prophet.
That's
they
what
knew
I'm
he,
like it was like,
and many people in the neighborhood used his services, and it was the occult was attached and the freaky deakiness of it, and an axe murder. Absolutely. The entire family was. Yeah,
very
it's
strange.
A big deal. It'd be a big deal nowadays.
It is,
But a lot of the clues, if there were any, were totally destroyed. And who's even to say if that was the killer that left the clue, that left the fingerprints? Mm-hmm. They don't know for sure.
Because they took
it as fact that it was from the killer. But, I mean, there were so many people that came there. They were mobbed. The police were mobbed when they brought the bodies out to take to the morgue. There's a picture of some bodies being put into the vehicle, and there's easily 400 or 500 people just like crammed in trying to get a look. It's pretty sick. Yeah. It's kind of amazing. I'll post it on the internet, on the internets,
on
our blogger thing. So 2 days later, on July 2nd, two men were brought in and held as suspects for these murders. One was Angelo DiPaoli. He was 34. And the other one was Umberto Tecchio. T-E-C-C-H-I-O, Tecchio, or Tecchio?
I would say Tecchio. Tecchio.
He was 42.
Touch me.
Now, both men admitted to being at the Benny's house that night. Umberto was making the last house payment that he had, and Angelo had just gone with him. And then after they dropped off the money, they left at about 8 p.m., and they went to go grab drinks. No way that they had alibis. Mm-hmm. Police couldn't find anything. Although they did find why they were suspects, I should say, is they found a banana knife or machete in DiPaoli's barn, along with freshly washed boots. Now, it never said if the boots were small and dainty.
Is the machete called a banana knife?
Well, this one was called a banana, and it kind of looks like a little machete.
That.
That's what I'm thinking a banana knife is, yeah.
Huh.
Like, because you hack the
well,
bananas off the tree.
Kind of the shape, but.
Yeah.
Okay.
To me, it's a machete. I don't know. It could be wrong. But for now, it's a machete. They thought they saw blood on this banana knife, right?
Mm-hmm.
They brought it in, had it tested. It wasn't blood. They were really liking Umberto for the suspect of these killings because a couple months prior, it seemed that Umberto killed his brother-in-law. Now, he claimed it was self-defense, but unfortunately, the brother-in-law died while he was at the hospital and he could not tell his side of the story. So Umberto's
self-defense.
Umberto's story of self-defense was accepted as a truth. And without any evidence, the police had to release both Angelo and Umberto. These names are killing me, man.
I would say Ange and but okay.
So both those men were released. People were on edge about the axe murderer and that there was one on the loose. It was unreal. And police were trying to find who did it. Couldn't come up with any leads. But in fact, one woman, 36-year-old woman with 5 children, was so distraught and worried about her and her children's safety that she jumped out of a 25th-story window of a downtown building. And the building's called the Barlum Tower. Not sure if it's still there or not.
With her kids?
No, just her. She's so worried about her safety, she killed herself.
Did she? That seems like another self-defense thing. You know what I'm
saying? The newspaper article said she had been reading an article about the whole thing, and she was so distraught, she jumped out.
Thank God she left her kids behind.
Exactly. But you're right. That totally could be a... Yeah, but you'd think...
You could set that up, though. That'd be so easy to put the newspaper out.
But you... I don't know. It's weird. On July 6th, Benny and his family were placed in white caskets and they were walked down the street in a rain. It's estimated that over 3,000 people crowded the streets to watch this macabre parade. And actually, police started to search the crowd, thinking that they might find the killer, or at least a suspect. They did arrest one man who was, per the newspaper, acting queerly with excited suspicion.
Dun, dun, dun. Dun, dun, dun.
But he was released after questioning, and when the police were asked why he wasn't a good suspect, he said that there was no way that he could have committed the murders by himself. I believe he was probably certifiably insane himself. Anyway, speaking of that, I didn't write it down and I can't remember where I saw it, but it was in one of the newspaper articles that said at the funeral service, the priest actually mentioned how Benny was insane himself, and that he practiced insane things, and
that's just what you want to have
at your funeral. I'm gonna make sure that's said at your funeral.
Thanks, Jen.
She was insane
in the membrane.
So for 2 weeks, 50 policemen that were considered the best of the best, cream of the crop, they were handpicked to search the neighborhood. They searched every inch of every house. They spoke with all the neighbors. No one said they heard anything, and no one saw anybody come or go. Now, seriously, they had to have been bloodied. Were the clothes? There was no clothes at the scene. There was no weapon at the scene. Nothing. How did somebody leave the house?
Right.
And after
out of all of that, you
butchering,
screaming of some sort, I would think.
Right. And the houses were close together. They weren't well made, you know? Uh-huh. So somebody had to see something. Somebody had to hear something. Nobody came forward. At the end of the 2 weeks, police just didn't really have anything. All they really had at this point was they were looking for a man with strong arms that was left-handed. They believed the murderer was left-handed, and he had small, dainty feet. That's all they knew.
And just one. There wasn't
multiple. They just believe it was one person. And they questioned, within the first 2 weeks, they questioned 500 people. They picked 150 people to grill them about the murders. And they came away with more questions than answers and a lot more motives for who could have killed him. Like, for instance, some of the religious sects, they believe that if a doctor is treating a patient and that patient dies, the doctor must pay with his life too. So they went around and they checked, and the year prior, 74 people that had gone to Benny had died within that year. Well, I mean, they could have gone.
That's a lot, though.
But they could have had cancer, and they came. That's all it said. I don't know. But if he was seeing 75 people a day out of 350...
Yeah, but you're seeing some of those multiple times, right?
Maybe. I don't know. I'm just saying. That's what they said. But out of those 74 clients, only 4 families actually said that they knew Benny. Mm. They never admitted that they went there, but they just said that they knew him. There was one person who kind of glanced through Benny's Bible or had read it before, that he felt that Benny probably prophesied his death, and to make it like come to fruition, they suggested that maybe he encouraged one of his followers to kill him. Maybe enticed him, riled him up, maybe somebody that wasn't stable.
Is there a chance stable. He could have killed his family and then hired somebody to kill him?
Could have. But why would the bloody footprints? Yeah, we don't know. But police thought that maybe the murders were motivated by revenge, either by another cult or someone that just wasn't happy with Benny's potions or amulets or something that just didn't work out.
Or his Bible.
Mm-hmm.
Or his doctoring.
There was a clue that somebody came and told the police that Benny had gone to speak with a man who was working down the road with demolishing a house. And Benny had said that he wanted some of the wood. He wanted to salvage some of the wood. And he told the man if he would bring the wood by the house that morning, morning of his death, or the morning of July 3rd, that he would pay the man cash, and a nice sum of cash for the woods. Well, there was so much commotion, nobody knew if there was actually a delivery truck there in the morning. Nobody heard a delivery truck. Nobody saw a delivery truck.
What about wood, though?
And there was no
cash
at the house. Or it was just somebody saying something. Mm-hmm. Police started interviewing people close to Benny, and they interviewed his doctor, who also lived in the house, or lived in the neighborhood, and the doctor...
Benny the doctor had a doctor?
Benny the doctor had a doctor. Well, you can't really heal thyself.
But he wasn't really a practicing doctor, Benny.
Well, he was a doctor. Medical he just doctor, couldn't though. Prescribe...
Yes.
He was a medical doctor.
He went to med school?
No, he had a medical license. He just couldn't prescribe...
But did he go to med school?
No, it doesn't matter, but he still had a license.
I want to be a doctor.
Well, go to Michigan.
I'm going to.
Yeah. So the doctor told the police that Benny was insane and a religious fanatic. Mm. And when the doctor went on to tell him that Benny sometimes would go outside on the street, wave his arms around, and shout incantations at the sky. And next they went to Benny's attorney and said, hey, anything that, you know, Benny could have been in trouble with? Nope, he had... Although Benny had had several lawsuits with his contractor business and real estate transactions, but none of those lawsuits were bad enough that somebody would be compelled to, like, mm-hmm. massacre an entire family of yeah. six. So the police were at a loss. After the 2 weeks, they admitted that there was just no more evidence, that it all dried up. They didn't know what to do. So in August, they accepted help from a psychic medium by the name of Princess. I'm sorry, the Princess. At midnight, they walked her through the murder house, and the medium tried to speak with the spirits. But...
Medium Princess.
And not too far into the night, the princess gave up by saying that the spirits were speaking to her in an unintelligible language.
Aramaic, like the Bible.
Or Italian, maybe.
Like Latin.
Who knows? Or...
Oh, Italian, yeah.
Maybe she just like wasn't a real psychic. Maybe. But that was the last that the police had heard anything or had tried to help until in March of 1930, people were shocked when they got their morning newspaper because the AP published an article with the shocking headline, "Eyewitness to Brutal Detroit Axe Slaying Finally Turns Up." And here's the report and how it was read. The witness is a shaggy brown mongrel dog, which belonged to the children of Benny Evangelist. The animal disappeared at the time the evangelist and his wife and four children were hacked to death on July 3, 1929. In the course of routine, a record was made of the dog's license number, but the dog was not found. Yesterday, a woman reported that a dog with a 1929 license number had come to her home. When she learned who had owned the animal previously, she decided not to adopt. Yes, they claimed the eyewitness was a dog.
Was he the getaway driver?
I guess.
Did he had a license?
Maybe he did it. Maybe he had a thumb.
You know, I've often said this, and I said this to my crime class.
The AP did it. The AP.
I know, but here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I told my kids this, and then Abby. Hi, Abby. She listens to us, so she'll like us.
Hey, Abby.
But she said that, she's like, you know, I kept thinking about that comment that you made. If dogs could talk, how many murders would be solved? Because it's mm-hmm. true.
It is true.
Okay.
Any true. Animal. But would they be allowed on stand? In March of 1932, the police arrest Umberto Tecchio, oh. based on new evidence they had, which I never found out what new evidence they had. It was the dog. The dog pointed his tail at him. Mm-hmm. Fingerprints were taken of Tecchio, and they sent him to another police department to have them compare, and it didn't match, so Umberto was released. In November of 1932, Detroit was rocked by yet another cult killing. It seems that Detroit was riddled with cults in the 20s and 30s.
It's Detroit, a cult city.
It is. Robert Harris was arrested for the murder of James Smith. Now, the murder took place at Robert's house, which is about a block east from the evangelist's house. when they arrested him, Robert told the police that he was just fulfilling a prophecy. This is the prophecy. The ninth hour of the 20th day had come Sunday. It was predestined 1,500 years ago that at that hour, I must take a human sacrifice to my gods. It must not be a member of the church, but some stranger, the first person I meet after leaving my home.
Well, if he's going to use that for an excuse, I'm going to start using that as an excuse for everything.
Mm-hmm. Robert told the police that Smith was a willing sacrifice, and he mounted the altar and stretched his arms and looked up. And at the stroke of noon, Robert then said that he plunged the knife into James's heart, then proceeded to crush his skull with the axle from a car, just to quiet him.
So are they sure that with the other, that they thought it was an axe or a machete or whatever? They did. It's not an axle, is it?
An axle?
Whatever. I don't even know what that is.
An axle from a car? It's what keeps the wheels.
Oh.
No, it was a knife. It was something sharp. The 8-inch knife that he used, it was so deep inside of him, the only thing that shone through his chest was a bit of the handle. Robert, they took him into custody and didn't have a problem taking him into custody, except when it came time to fingerprint him. It seems that Robert wore a glove on his left hand, and he wouldn't take it off.
Oh.
And he told the officers, "My right hand belongs to everyone, but my left hand belongs to the king." And they had to get his glove off by force.
What?
Yes, the king. God, I don't know. It's a freaky cult. It's another freaky cult. At the scene, the police found a piece of paper that was probably from some kind of magazine or a book. And that piece of paper said, "The unbeliever must be stabbed through the heart." So Harris's wife, Queen, or Bertha, told police that her and her children had been forced to prepare for and watch the murder under the threat of death themselves. Bertha said that she had been pulled from her bed and beaten when she had first heard of her husband's plan. But since she and the children were all considered disciples by Robert, they had no choice but to attend the ritual.
Oh, man.
That was from the Detroit Free Press. And no charges were brought up against her. They were scared. They kind of had to do it. So the police were desperate to get somebody for the murders of the Evangelist family. And they were hoping to pin these gruesome cult killings on Robert.
Mm-hmm.
When they questioned him, at first he confessed, and then he backtracked and he just wasn't quite sure about it. And so, in fact, later found out that he wasn't even in Detroit until October of 1929. And when they sent his fingerprints off to be checked, they didn't match. So another suspect that the police did try to find was Leon Angelino.
Mm-hmm.
It seems that Leon did escape from the Pennsylvania Asylum for the Criminally Insane in 1923.
1923?
Mm-hmm. 6 years prior to the...
Did they ever find him back?
He had escaped twice before, but this last time he had not found. They didn't find him, and there's never been a record of...
He did it.
...where he was. Well, how did he find out where he was?
I don't know.
Google. Although the M... The, yeah, in 1929. Although the MO of the murders did match up, to me it just doesn't seem possible. I mean, how... There was no correspondence between Leon and Benny. Police couldn't find any chance that they'd even, that Leon even knew where Benny was.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and technically it could be, but I did read an article that only one that sourced that Leon was killed 2 years prior, or that he died. He was hit by a freight train, but nobody had, once he escaped, he was gone. There was no record, nothing.
I don't know.
Maybe just a desperate police officer trying to put blame. But I mean, you would think it's same MO,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So in November 1939, Umberto suddenly died. Some said pneumonia, hemorrhage somehow,
mm-hmm.
don't know. And it was only then that someone came forward, and that totally took away Umberto's alibi, just bursted it to bits.
Mm.
Kid's name was Frank Costanza.
Frank Costanza?
Frank Costanza.
From Seinfeld?
Is it Frank?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
Okay.
Didn't think his name was Frank.
Yeah.
I thought it was George.
George is, Frank is his dad.
Oh, okay. I didn't watch it that much. Anyway, Frank Costanza, the Detroit Free Press, called him a little one-armed newspaper boy. Frank Costanza claimed to have seen Umberto at the Evangelist's front porch at 5 a.m. the morning of the murders.
Mm.
He said he even spoke with him. Police also found someone that saw Umberto entering his house, the boarding house that he lived in, with a canvas bag on the day of the murders. But the bag was never found, and police could not question Umberto again. So they kind of said Umberto did it, but they really can't prove Umberto did it.
Right.
But the case is still open. In 1945 in Windsor, Ontario, police arrested a 51-year-old transient by the name of Richard Rowe. They get him they think he's a suspect of a stabbing death of at least 2 to 3 people. When they ran his background, they found that he was in Detroit about the time of the Evangelist family murders. Mm-hmm. So they question him. They look through his background. They also, not only do they think he could be the suspect or he could be the killer mm-hmm. of Benny and his family, they also are going to try to pin the Cleveland Torso murders on him. And also a rash of killings that were in the Pennsylvania mountains in 1930s. I tried to find out what happened to him. Couldn't find anything. So considering everybody's still not, or the Cleveland Torso murders aren't solved and the Evangelist family murders aren't solved, I'm going to say that Richard Rowe did not do that. Nobody was ever caught. Nobody was ever formally charged. Nobody was ever arrested. And to this day, it goes unsolved. In 1940, here's the creepy part. In 1940, after years of standing empty, the Evangelist home on the corner of St. Aubyn Street was razed to the ground. All there is today is an empty lot. But people in the area swear they hear disembodied screams and voices, and they see the headless Benny wandering around the property. But my main fear, and why I picked this, was somebody breaking in the house and just murdering the family, and no reason why. Like the movie The Strangers, mm-hmm, you know how? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, he had some, made some enemies along the way, or people that were upset with him, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's kind of weird. It was like a cult within a cult within a cult. Yeah, very weird. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
But yeah, I
can't believe that, like, them murdering the wife, the baby, the two, and then the other one, and then him. And nobody heard anything or saw anything?
They swore they didn't. But, it was the immigrants in the 1930s. And remember,
it was in the summer, right? July.
July. So windows were open. Somebody had to have heard something.
Unless you just knocked him in the head so hard that it just...
Now, remember with Ruth Schneider, this is about the same time as her, as when she was committing her murders. Remember how the Italian population were nobody really liked them. Like, she tried to blame them. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but he looked Italian. Yeah. So maybe everybody was just afraid to go to the police. They were all immigrants. They were scared. Mm-hmm. They didn't want to make a mess,
Mm-hmm. And get in trouble and be targeted. Right. I get that.
So I don't know. It seems like something that would very easily be solved today.
You'd think, right?
But the fact that 6 bodies were mutilated in that fashion, yet there were no clues but bloody footprints and maybe possibly two bloody fingerprints.
And they never were able to link those fingerprints with one of the members of the family?
No. Well, I don't know if they even checked. See, at some point, I think the police probably knew that the bloody fingerprints didn't hold up because it could have been a police officer. It could have been somebody that mm-hmm. was at the scene. And mm-hmm. because if you are able to kill 6 people with a axe violently, you know you're going to get splattered in blood.
Totally.
If you can walk out with just bloody fingerprints but bloody footprints, that's
something. Yeah.
Yeah. You're not going to mistakenly leave just 2 fingerprints.
Well, that was good, Jen.
Yeah. Next week.
Happy late birthday to you.
Thank you.
Woo. You look old.
Huh?
You look not a day old.
I don't look over a day old. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yay.
All right. Anyway. You want me to tell the people where they can find us? Because you talk a lot.
I do talk a lot.
No, just today.
Okay.
But always. Anyway, if you would like to, please reach out to Apple and give us 5 stars and a nice little review. We would
love that. Stitcher.
Makes us so happy. Or Stitcher or Google or anywhere.
Anywhere that you can leave a review and let us know that you left a review so we can find it.
There you go.
Yeah.
You can reach us at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. On the Twitter at Our True Crime Pod. We have a blog, which is www.ourtruecrimepodcast.com. We're on Instagram. We have a Facebook page if you want to.
The blog? You say the blog?
Yep, I did. Mm-hmm. If you want to get on that. Otherwise, just find us and we will find you back, hopefully.
We will.
Okay.
Oh, well, we'll find you. We'll hunt you down.
We also have a Patreon page if you want to. You'll get some extras, some goodies from us if you want to support us. Your favorite or semi-favorite or you think we're okay podcast, whichever one you want. That would be great. And I think that's it.
Yeah.
So awesome. Until next time, this is Dr. Cam signing off. I'm giving myself a name.
Oh,
Dr.
Yeah.
Cam.
And this is Prophet Jen.
Remember, lock your doors.
Keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love ya. Worked it on the railroad
all the live long day.
He's a cultist. Yeah. So it also teaches that the purses.
Purses? Do they have purses?
Purpose.
Oh, purses. Yeah. I like masters with purses.
Better. I know. I need a new purse. Now, Lenny's wife didn't feel.
Lenny or Leon?
Fuck me.
No, thank you.
Thank God. Thank God. Lenny did.
Lenny or Leon?
Leon. Lenny's could be naked too, for all I know, but Leon.
Jesus. Oh, okay.
I'm trying to work on my cadence too. So it's hard.
You know what?
I need
one.
Cadence.
You pick one.
I need cadence.
Correct names or cadence?
What do you want? Do you want the right story or do you want me to say it quickly and like conversational? You can't have it all. I'm struggling here. All right. I'm struggling.
Dude, all aboard. Lenny.
Look at the Benny, George. Look at the Benny. Only the literary will know that one.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Next day, or actually 2 days later, July 25th. That's not 2 days later. That's like 20 days later or so. I'm going to calm down in with a butterfly.
A few days later.
On July 5th. So in March of 1932, the police arrest Umber Tecco, or Tecchio again.
Maybe, you know, is he telling the truth or is he just woofing?
So bad. He's a woofing.
Oh.
In March of 1932, the police... in March
maybe
of 19...
He's gonna get a rawr deal.
A rawr. Oh, you're... Okay.
Oh, well, he's got a rough way to go.
You need a nap.
I told you, I'm so sleepy. Okay, go ahead.
Robert Harris was arrested
you
for the...
You're so over me. Okay, I'm going to quiet down now. Okay, go ahead.
I got to go to a birthday dinner that I don't really want to go to.
Somebody's going to be 50 tomorrow.
Somebody's already 50.
That's not my point.
The next day, Leon took a club...
You know, it's really fun that I have to so pay attention. Just I know. To make sure you keep the name straight.
I know, because it's
one
hard.
One day I'm not going
to... You know, one day I was trying to look something up on this, and I kept calling the guy Richard, and I couldn't figure it out. And I kept getting the actor Richard Harris, and I'm like, why the hell is this coming up Richard Harris? Well, it's not. It's Robert Harris. Totally different thing. It's my psychics.
One day I'm just not going to correct you. We're going to go and...
Then we're going to go back and correct it?
No, because the listeners will be like, wait, what? Who's that? Who's Leroy? Who's Lenny? Who is that? They'd be like, five different people. Okay, go ahead.
Look at the rabbits, Lenny. Okay.
I'm gonna cuddle you forever and make you my own.
That's what's gonna happen. I'm gonna be Lenny and sit by the river. Yeah.